This is Fresh Air. When you think punk rock, you think the Sex Pistols. And when you think Sex Pistols, you think of Johnny Rotten and Sid Vicious. You may not even recognize the name Glenn Matlock. He was the original bass player with the British band before Sid Vicious. Matlock left the group before they recorded most of their songs, but he wrote the music for the songs they're best known for, including this one, God Save the Queen. The Sex Pistols created the image and attitude of British punk rock in the mid-70s. Matlock says that was part of the problem. The band became more about the punk image than music. He credits Malcolm McLaren with that problem. McLaren was the punk impresario who managed the band. In Matlock's new memoir, I Was a Teenage Sex Pistol, he writes about the early days of the band. He says he left in 1977 because the Pistols were becoming too much like the Monkees.
Well, the comparison there was that, as I understood the Monkees, they weren't a band as such. They weren't a band that evolved and got together to be a band by themselves. They were manipulated by their... it was made for a TV show, mainly, to cash in on the Beatles myth. And Malcolm tried to push it along the same kind of lines, and it wasn't like that. And to do that really denied the strength of what the band was all about, which was kids playing music for the kids and grabbing the ball by the horns for themselves, you know, and doing it with a lot of spunk and a lot of spirit.
What were your reasons for leaving the Sex Pistols besides the fact that it reminded you of the Monkees?
Well, that was the main reason, really. It became, how can I say this? It just became a caricature of itself, and it wasn't honest any longer. It became like a dishonest exercise somehow in my mind.
When you left the band, I think somebody made the statement that you were asked to leave because you liked the Beatles. Is that an apocryphal story, or did that really happen?
No, that's not true at all. I mean, I was, again, very annoyed with McLaren, because what happened was I felt that I didn't want to continue with the band the way it was going, with the way Malcolm was steering it, and I said that to him. So he accepted that, and we shook hands on it. Again, this is all in the book. But a week later, he'd sent a telegram to the NME, which is like a music paper over here, saying what you just said, you know, and I felt very betrayed by Malcolm because I bore them no malice at all.
When you left the band and you were replaced on bass by Sid Vicious, what did you think of him as a performer in the Sex Pistols?
As a performer, I thought he was great. As a bass player, I thought he was atrocious.
Did it matter that he didn't play
bass? Well, what the band became, it didn't matter at all, no, because then it became that media exercise thing, but then it became not the rock band that it was supposed to be in the first place. So I don't know whether it mattered or not. In my book, it did matter, but ultimately, in what everybody else thinks, you know, perhaps it didn't. But I find that a bit sad, really. You know, that a circus act is more important than a really good rock and roll band.
The Sex Pistols got its start through Malcolm McLaren's shop in England. That's where you started to work when you were like 15 years old or something.
That's right, yeah.
And this is a shop that when you started working there specialized in 50s fashions and then ended up specializing in sex and fetishism. How did the band relate to the store? What was the connection?
Well, the main connection was that what was going on in London at the time was really that kind of glam rock thing, which was petering out by then. It was like a long-haired kind of hippie scene, and there weren't many places to go to identify with something that wasn't to do with all that. So Malcolm's shop was like the antithesis of that scene, but also it was a pretty funky kind of place, and it seemed pretty happening. So gradually, kids started hanging out there more and more, and it became like a hip place to be, and I thought, well, instead of just hanging out there, I'd rather get a job there and coin some money out of it, which I did. And that's how I met Steve and Paul. But it was because Malcolm had unwittingly provided some kind of almost youth club for kids in London who wanted to do something that was a bit more adventurous, you know, and just didn't want to go with the flow.
Did you start a band there independent of Malcolm McLaren?
Steve and Paul already had a band going. They was called Strand then, or the Swankers or something like that, and Paul's brother-in-law was the bass player, and he wasn't taking it that seriously, and Steve and Paul, and there was another guy called Wally, who was the guitarist at the time, were involved, and they wanted to take it real seriously. I overheard them actually mentioning to Malcolm that they were looking for a new bass player because Del, I think Paul's brother-in-law was called, wasn't working out. I overheard this. I said to Malcolm, well, look, I play bass, you know, mention it to him, which he did. And then I went off to rehearse with them, and we rehearsed for a good year before Malcolm even became involved at all.
It was Malcolm McLaren's idea, I think, to hire Johnny Rotten and bring him into the band.
I don't think it was, actually. Steve spotted him first, and he mentioned to Malcolm to keep a lookout for him, because, again, John was one of the guys who used to come in the shop to hang out.
So how did the band change when Johnny Rotten, or Johnny Lydon, as he was then, joined?
Well, I think John basically encapsulated the spirit that we all had, and he managed to put what we were trying to do in terms of music and not being particularly creative lyrically. He kind of like hit the nail on the head, as it was, with his lyrics. And that was it, when he was up and running.
Story behind the writing of Anarchy in the UK?
Well, yeah, basically it was that me and John had been on Steve's back because he was really seemed to be quite happy to take a back seat in the writing of the song, and we was having a go at him, and you know, he came up with a few ideas which weren't much cop, so he said, well, you're so clever then, you know, why don't you come up with something? I really didn't have much of an idea at all. I had this tiny little riff that I'd been knocking around with at home. So I sort of tentatively played one chord, and he said, well, yeah, that's one chord. What comes next? And the first chord was a G, so the next one was an F. And I kind of worked it out there and then on the spot, and it just sounded really good. So that was how the song came about. But it was really through me being put on the spot more than anything else. And John had some lyrics, you know, and he sat down and wrote the lyrics to it there and then.
My guest is Glenn Matlock, the original bass player with the Sex Pistols. More after this short break. This is Fresh Air. Glenn Matlock is my guest. He's written a new memoir called I Was a Teenage Sex Pistol. What did you wear for gigs early on? Did the clothes come from Malcolm's shop?
Yeah. I mean, I used to wear this little rubber suit with zips in the backside that you undid and your bum sort of hung out, which was quite nice if the gig was pretty hot, which they became. I mean, if you look at pictures of us these days of what we look like then, it doesn't really seem that outrageous. It's short hair, drainpipe trousers. But at the time, everybody was into flares and loom pants and tie-dyed things and long hair. And we really sort of stuck out like sore thumbs, which was good, you know. But on the other hand, that kind of look did stem from that. There's a thing in England, I doubt if you have it in the States, called skinheads. And Steve and Paul used to be like the skinheads in West London, which is like very much a mod kind of connotation. It was the development of the mod thing. Working class kids work, you know, go out, like to look good. So there was quite a strong element of that in it, although we were never skinheads in the band as such. But that's why we were such an antithesis to the hippie thing, because skinheads hated hippies.
Well, now the word skinhead also has this racist implication to it. Did it then?
Yeah, well, it did then, yeah.
So you say in the book that you were once a bit of a skinhead yourself.
Yeah, a bit of one, but I was just sort of toying with the look more than anything else. There was no racist overtones to my side of things. And, yeah, some of the skinheads did, but again, it was like a nucleus, a sort of a nutty hardcore of people. And with most trends, people kind of go for the look more than the politics of it. I mean, you're not particularly into racist or anti-racist politics at the age of 14 or 15. Or people in this country aren't really. And even if they are, it's only because they don't understand things that well, you know.
The impression I have from your book is of all the things that you resented in terms of the image that Malcolm McLaren created for the Sex Pistols, what you resented most was the image that this was a band that couldn't really play.
Well, yeah, I do resent that, actually, and I find it particularly ironic that there's a new book been written by a friend of mine called John Savage, which has just come out, called England's Dreaming, and that's getting quite a lot of attention over it. It's been written in a very weighty style. And I've heard that Malcolm's called him up recently, you know, and he didn't realise the mistakes that he made. And then he's been doing, like, TV shows and things saying, you know, like, the Pistols were a great rock and roll band. They wrote some of the great just music since the 50s in terms of rock and roll. But the thing is, it's taken him all this time to realise that. He didn't realise that at the time. He didn't realise what he had on his hands. And I feel very betrayed by Malcolm for him being such a schmuck, for not realising that. You know, if he'd been working with us instead of against us, I think you'd find that the Pistols would have been as big as the Stones, if not more so, and would never have sold out.
What do you think the future of the Sex Pistols would have been if it hadn't been for Malcolm McLaren? It would have been a very different band. Could be nobody would have heard you.
Well, sure. I don't think the Sex Pistols would have been the Sex Pistols without Malcolm McLaren, but I don't think Malcolm McLaren would have been Malcolm McLaren without the Sex Pistols, so it's like a very symbiotic relationship. I just think the things that Malcolm has said after the event aren't true, and I think they need to be put straight, which I've endeavoured to do so.
There's an incident that you talk about in the book where the band was on a TV show in England and ended up swearing live on British TV, which caused quite a stir in the press
and among
the public. Without repeating the words, because we wouldn't be able to broadcast them either, what happened?
What happened was we got invited to do this TV show. We just signed to EMI Records. We was about to embark on a nationwide tour, which was to be called the Anarchy Tour, with The Clash and The Damned and Johnny Thunders' Heartbreakers. And EMI Records had swung us this live TV show at 6 o'clock, I think it was called... it was known as the Bill Grundy Show. It was the Today programme, it was called. And anyway, we went on that, and as it happens, Bill Grundy didn't particularly want to interview us, and he used to like a drink and all that lot, and he'd had a big ruck with his producer upstairs, who told him that he had to interview us whether he liked it or not. Well, Bill Grundy obviously didn't like it, and he tried to vent his frustration on us, and he took it out on the wrong blokes, really. And that was it. He encouraged us to swear, so we did. I mean, it was stupid. And then everybody was outraged, so there you go.
What effect did that incident on TV have on the image of the band, and how did you use that?
It just put us fairly and squarely in the public eye.
So it was helpful?
Yeah, it was very helpful. I mean, we never moaned about it at all. We thought it was funny. It was stupid, really, you know.
You say your memory of the Anarchy Tour was of boredom. What was boring about it? It was your first national tour.
Most of the time we was held up in hotel rooms trying to find out whether we would be allowed to play at the local gig or not. So, you know, we didn't really know what was going on.
A lot of people...
So out of, I think there was supposed to be 26 gigs, we played 3.
What happened to the other 23?
Well, they got cancelled.
Because of the reputation of the band?
Because of the reputation of the band. And it was a sort of a big thing, you know, that they wanted us to play in front of the mayor of the town so he could sort of be like the official censor of the show. And if he thought it was all right, we could go on. But, you know, we wouldn't stand for that, so we refused to play. You know, it was either accept us as we were or don't get us at all. So they didn't get us at all in a lot of places.
So that was frustrating to you because you really wanted to play.
Well, really wanted to play, yeah. I mean, that's why I wanted to be in a band, you know. But on the other hand, we wasn't going to back down. I think it was ultimately more important not to back down.
You were named after Glenn Miller. The Glenn and Glenn Matlock was from Glenn Miller, which I think is pretty funny, considering the music you went on to play.
Yeah, the guy who took one flight too many, right, yeah, that's true. I suppose it is funny. Me mum and dad liked dance bands. That was a big thing in the late 40s, 50s, and Glenn Miller was their era. So here I am, Glenn Matlock.
So what did your parents think of the Sex Pistols?
Not a lot. They don't talk about it.
They still don't talk about it?
They still don't talk about it.
That's a period of your life you still don't talk about with them?
yeah, I kind of mention it sometimes. And they said, Glenn, we really must read your book and all that. I said, look, I don't want to give it to you. And if I do give it to you, you know, like, you've got to accept it at face value. So I gave it to them. And next time I went round, it was like a stony silence. And my mum goes, this bit about the Irish people in there boiling their cabbage in the same water as the bacon. I never said that. And she did, you know, she always said it. So that was the only thing she picked up on. She was a bit worried about the Rileys downstairs. So mums, eh?
Well, I want to thank you a lot for talking with us.
Sorry, thank you very much.
Glenn Matlock was the original bass player with the Sex Pistols. His new memoir is called I Was a Teenage Sex Pistol. It's published in the States by Faber and Faber. This is Fresh Air.